Hello, welcome, welcome. This is Veronica Entwistle, your host of Paradigm Shifters. And the Paradigm Shifter we're hosting today is really going to maybe shift your mind or really get the dedication that some people have to making a difference, to healing himself and the world. And oh boy, and some of you have already heard of James Twyman, known as the Peace Troubadour. At least that's what you used to be called, right?
Oh, still am.
Good. Well, welcome to the show, James. And I was just reading how you honor St. Francis of Assisi and his ability to love all nature and animals and all that. And you've taken his vows. You've taken orders. Can you explain to us what that really embodies?
Sure. Well, let's just begin with St. Francis. Mm-hmm. Most people know him as the saint of the birdbath, which is sort of the lightest, nicest version of St. Francis. Mm-hmm. Certainly a part of who he was, but a very small part. Hmm. He was a revolutionary. He was someone who changed the world 800 years ago. And of course, Catholics are all raised with him, but even people of many other religions, they love St. Francis. He is definitely the most popular Catholic saint mm-hmm. in the world. And, you know, being raised Catholic, I was always very drawn to him myself. And I was having mystical experiences when I was young and decided I was maybe supposed to be a priest. And then I met a young Franciscan brother who I loved, and he inspired me to enter the order, which I did when I was 18.
Oh, wow.
And I was only there for a couple of years. And if you don't know what that means, the Franciscan order is one of many, many orders within the Catholic Church, usually founded by a particular saint. So obviously, the Franciscan order is founded by St. Francis. Mm-hmm. And it really just goes back to the beginning commitment that he made when he decided to give everything, to be 100% dedicated. And that led to him, of course, before he was the rich kid in town, but it led to him giving everything up, literally stripping naked in front of all of Assisi and walking out. Mm. He said, I'm just not going to play this game anymore. And he was ostracized. He was a fool in their mind. Of course, ultimately, they began to recognize the holiness of that decision, mm-hmm. especially
when
other
people
began.
He was known as crazy, wasn't he? He was known as...
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And many others soon began to follow him. And you can imagine it would be like anywhere else. It seems like a little cult has developed on the outside of town that everybody's afraid of. But very soon they realized who and what this really was, what was happening. And so that's how the Franciscan order started. And I became a friar when I was young and left, but it really always stayed with me, my love of St. Francis and my love of that life. So your question was, why did I all these years later choose to take vows? Mm-hmm. First of all, I am not in the Franciscan order because I'm too old. You have to be under 40 to be accepted.
Oh, really?
But I wanted to just recognize what was already true. And the truth is, I've always been that. This is just the foundation of who I am, wanting to live simply, wanting to give 100%, wanting to see if it's possible to do what St. Francis did and what Jesus talked about. And so I have a friend who's a bishop, and he decided and offered to give me these private vows. Now, the thing is, according to church canon, you can take vows with a bishop as a hermit. So technically, that's the way I chose to do it, as a Franciscan-styled hermit. Hmm. However, I'm a very bad hermit.
Well, wait a minute. If St. Francis was a revolutionary, well, that's okay then.
Well, Francis really wanted to be a hermit himself. Mm-hmm. That was always his desire, was to leave everything behind and just live in his cave at the top of Mount Subasio and just pray. But like with me, the world keeps pulling us back. We keep getting inspired by all these other things. And Francis had that, and it's the same for me. And so that's going to ultimately lead into our discussion about the book Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis, as well as this this Broadway musical that I'll be doing next year, because I just can't seem to let Francis go, and I just keep wanting to express the love I have of his simple message of peace.
Mm-hmm. That Brother, Son, Sister Moon is an old movie or performance,
that's right.
Was it not?
Well, it's even older than you think. Mm-hmm. It goes back 800 years ago to a prayer that Francis wrote. Now, a lot of people love what's called the Prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace.
Oh, I love
and that is one of the most popular prayers in history. However, Francis did not write that prayer.
Oh.
It was written probably at the end of the 19th century. It was attributed to him, but it was not written by him.
Mm-hmm.
Francis did, however, write many beautiful prayers, and first among them is a prayer called the Canticle of the Creatures, or otherwise known as Brother, Son, Sister, Moon.
Ah.
And it's a prayer that is, he wrote at the very end of his life, giving praise to all of God's creation. And it was the first thing that was ever written and published in what we now know as the Italian language.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very beautiful. And then in the early 70s, Franco Zeffirelli, my favorite director, made a beautiful movie about Francis and Claire, called Brother, Son, Sister, Moon. Oh, yeah, it's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite film.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it at least 200 times. And so he made that film. So that's where most people know that title.
Mm-hmm.
But it originally goes back to that original prayer that Francis did write. And when I knew that I was going to, I can tell you later how I wrote this musical, but when I knew it was going to be going to Broadway, I wanted to choose that again, to use it again, because I think it does sum up so beautifully well the spirit of Francis.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me this, I want to interrupt, this is like a sidebar. Okay, you say you really wanted to enter that, but like St. Francis, you get pulled in to, would you say, political situations?
Never.
Human, what do you get pulled in by?
I really do my best to avoid the political part of it.
Oh, good.
And
okay.
It's hard. No, what Francis's message is all about is simply this. He wanted to see if it was possible, not just to talk about these subjects, but to really live them,
okay,
or to do what Jesus said. And even today, just like it was when he was alive, if you said that to the average person, they would say, well, that's impossible. Maybe it was possible when Jesus was alive, but it's not possible now. And he challenged that. So he gave everything to the point. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share a quote with you that really inspired me that I hadn't even heard until about a year ago. And when I heard this, this is what inspired me to write the musical. So see if you can guess who said this. I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said, the revolution we started failed. What we really needed were 10 St. Francis of Assisi.
Aww.
Who do you think said that?
I don't know. I think of someone like Abby Hoffman or, I don't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Someone from the 60s, maybe, or maybe a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., someone like that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to be very surprised because it was Vladimir Lenin who
you're
said
kidding.
This about the Russian Revolution.
Wow.
An atheist who also recognized the power of one person or 10 people who were 100% dedicated. So when I heard that, that's when I said, okay, I'll be number 10. Who are the other 9? And I'm willing to do this to the point that I'm willing to give up everything, all of my possessions, to sign them over to a trust so that everything I own is used for this work. I'm willing to go on the road penniless, to travel across the country with no money, with no idea of even how I'm getting from city to city, in order to get to Broadway to perform this musical.
Wow.
And even when we get to Broadway, to have the musical not so much be for the people who pay for a ticket, but really the musical is for the people who cannot pay for a ticket, for the homeless and for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is every day, this show will be going for 2 weeks, we'll have people on the streets passing out tickets to the homeless, inviting them to come and be our guest. We'll have a soup kitchen in the back. We're going to invite everyone who does pay for a ticket to also bring maybe a bag of socks or maybe a blanket so we can pass out to these people. So who we're really serving and who this musical is really for are those people, because that's what Francis would have done. Mm-hmm. That's who he would have been focused on. So I'm so excited, and I have no fear about traveling across the country penniless, mm-hmm. along with my friend Bill Free. We're going together, mm-hmm. Because I know that the goodness and the generosity that's within all of our hearts is going to be revealed. And if there was ever a time for that to happen, it's now. With the polarization and everything that's going on, mm-hmm. we need to find something like this that we can get behind, mm-hmm. that we can mobilize and show, no, we're never going to solve this problem politically.
No,
it's impossible.
Of course not.
But if we just listen to each other like Francis did, then I think maybe we would have a chance.
But also you're saying something that I think a lot of us ache for, and that's the drop into the purity of what it is to live, to love, to share, to be,
yep.
to be a contributor. I think a lot of us really deeply long for that simplicity. It's not simplicity, but it's like you've got a light to go for, you know?
Oh, I think you're right. I think we're all longing for that, aren't we?
I really think so, yeah.
We wonder, well, how can we do it with our busy lives and our families? And it's just a moment-to-moment commitment. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on about tiny houses and so many other things that are calling us to a greater place of simplicity and service.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's very Franciscan. And we just have to say yes to it and then ask for guidance. How am I going to do this with my busy life or my job? I'm lucky because this is my job. So I can give everything and travel and
well, you know,
be
James,
radical.
Something that really, really hits me over and over lately, but right in the middle of your conversation, is looking at, for example, the homeless. It isn't just about houses. It's about respect, looking at them
yeah.
and having to give. I keep seeing that when you look at someone, they feel something. Are you looking
yep.
at them with something that strengthens them or weakens them? People are so hurt and distorted.
Yeah.
So I'm just throwing that in as another part
well,
of
you're
what
absolutely
you're offering.
Right. And Francis, when he walked out of Assisi naked, the first place that he went were to the people that he had been most afraid of.
Oh, wow.
And that was the lepers.
Wow.
And at that time, leprosy was an academic, was an epidemic. So almost every town or city had a leper colony,
mm-hmm.
and they would always avoid that place. And yet Francis went right into the heart of what he was most afraid of and said, this is who I'm going to serve.
Wow.
And the lepers of our world today are the homeless,
mm-hmm.
are these people that you mentioned that it's easier just to turn the other way like they did to the lepers in their time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way for us to bring everyone together. I don't think there's ever been a show like this in New York that is focusing primarily on that group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it sends a powerful signal that we have to look outside these boxes that we've created and see that we're all in this together. The
mm-hmm.
people I agree with, the people I don't agree with, the people who have and the people who have not. We're all in this together. And maybe this is a sign that can realize that vision of Vladimir Lenin, that if there were only 10 people who were doing this, I mean, really doing this,
mm-hmm.
maybe that would be enough to turn the tide of the division and the polarization that we're experiencing around the world right now.
Where we can actually look at each other right in the eye and know we are unity, we are one.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is a really exciting thing. So were you like going to see the lepers, for example? St. Francis had to walk through his fear, right?
Mm-hmm, he did.
Are you walking through a fear as you walk around the country?
Hmm.
I don't mean to put you on, you know, I don't want to strip your confidence.
No, that's all right.
Confidence.
No, I've just never thought of it that way because I am so confident that it's going to be perfectly provided, though I don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
We have certain rules that we're going to try and live by. For example, we can't receive any money, but But someone can, for example, buy us either a bus ticket or a train ticket, but not a flight.
Oh,
we're going to stay on the ground the whole way. So we'll be completely reliant upon generosity of people for food and housing and transportation, all of it.
So people
can offer you
a place to stay.
Oh, yeah.
Food to eat.
But as often as possible, we're going to try and stay in the places where the poor are staying.
Okay.
Whenever possible.
Okay.
Now, have you ever heard of a woman named Peace Pilgrim?
Yes,
because
I think this is.
Okay, so this is another example. Someone who, like St. Francis, decided she wanted to do something radical, in her case, with her retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Here she was, a retired woman, and she decided that she was going to put on this little tunic. I said on one side, Peace Pilgrim, on the other side, 25,000 miles for peace. It started off saying 10,000 miles for peace. Then she put 25. And of course, over, I think, about a 25-year period, she walked across the country back and forth way more than 25,000. And the whole time, she had nothing with her. I think she always said she had her comb and her brush, her toothbrush. And she would walk until given shelter and fast until given food. And this went on for 25 years. And she said that in that whole time, she probably missed one meal and didn't have a place to stay one night.
Wow.
That shows what happens when someone's on fire. Because if you ever watch a video of Peace Pilgrim, she is on fire, just like Francis was on fire. People are drawn to that fire. When we're with someone who's on fire in that way, we want to be around them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I can't say I have any fear. It's more a curiosity just to see how it's going to unfold, because I know we're going to get where we need to go. We're going to find what we need to find, all of that. How it's going to happen, who we're going to meet, I'm sure that's going to be the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we are going to be shooting this whole thing for a little movie, so hopefully you'll get a chance to witness our cross-country trek. And experience it for yourself.
Yeah, so you've made a few movies already, haven't you?
I have. Uh-huh. I have, yes.
Is that part of your, let me see, is that part of your service? It is, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, every time I make a movie, I swear I'll never do it again. And I always do, because it's so much work and it's so much money and such a huge risk. The biggest movie I ever made was a movie called Redwood Highway, which starred Shirley Knight and Tom Skerritt, and beautiful film. I mean, you can get it on Amazon Prime or many other places, and it's a beautiful film. But it was a big risk, and it's very hard to even make back your money when you're making a movie like that. But I do love it, and with this, it's going to be much more simple, just trying to chronicle all the little adventures that happened to us along the way.
Mm-hmm. It's really exciting. I was reading how you're wanting to create senior cinema opportunities, or you know.
Not anymore.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
That's old news. That was when I mean that's the thing with the internet. You go looking and you see things that were happening 5 or 6 years ago.
And I
that
noticed it's tricky because they don't put the year in very often.
Yeah. That was when we made that movie Redwood Highway.
Oh, okay.
Because the movie is about a woman who's 75 who decides you're never too old to have a great adventure. And she decides to go on an 80-mile hike all the way to the Pacific Ocean. And the adventure she has it. And I thought, we need more movies that are for people of that age group. And so at that time, I was promoting senior cinema. But boy, things happen so fast anymore. And I get inspired in different directions. So right now, all of my focus is on that book, Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis, as well as this tour. And by the way, I should say that if people want to see the first 20 minutes of the musical, they can do that by just going to Jimmy Twyman, TWYMAN.com. And there's a link right at the top. You can click on it for the musical. And I was just in Assisi in Italy recently and performed it there several times, and it was shot professionally. So you get to see me performing it in Assisi. And you can also look and see where I'm going to be traveling to on the way to New York. And if I'm coming to a city near anyone who's listening, I would hope they would come and see it for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And when you say the musical, you're talking about Brother Sun, Sister Moon, right?
Of course, yes. Yeah. That's the musical.
We'll talk about Giovanni again. What is the title of that? Is that a book?
Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis is my latest book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also another story about a woman who goes on a long walk. I don't know what it is about stories about women who go on long walks, but I seem to do it a lot. And yeah, this is a story that I was sitting with for years, because about 7 years ago, I decided that I was not going to write another book. After 15 books, I said, I'm not going to write another one unless one is so compelling and doesn't let me go, and then I have to write it. And I was walking the Camino of St. Francis about 7 years ago. And just so people know, these are the little paths and roads that Francis would have walked 800 years ago, going from village to village on his way to Assisi.
Hmm.
And I've brought quite a number of groups on that track. It's about 110 miles. And the first time, I began to play with this idea. You know, you're walking, so you just fantasize. And I began to think about this story about a woman who is on this journey, and she has this great adventure with this young Italian man named Giovanni, who basically helps her to understand and learn about the life of St. Francis, but in a very modern and mysterious way.
Hmm.
And it was my way of telling the story of St. Francis in a way that's never been told before,
mm-hmm.
but also with this the journey of this woman named Anna and Giovanni. So I finally just sat down and said, I've got to write this because I can't stop thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and it came out in March. And I think, you know, it's maybe my second favorite book that I've written.
Hmm. is the woman in that book, is she sort of current? Is she a modern woman?
Yes. Yeah. This is a modern story.
Uh-huh.
It's fiction, but mm-hmm. But it's a very
modern tale. It's
an allegory
sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Sounds wonderful. I guess I better get it, eh?
Well, I'm very happy with it. You know, and that's the reason I didn't want to write another book, because when you're somewhat successful, your publisher just wants you to keep writing a book every year to keep your brand going. And I didn't feel like I had anything new to say. But when this story came along, it just was so compelling for me, and I just couldn't let it go. And I'm so happy I finally wrote it down.
Hmm. It seems that you have a lot of ideas and a lot of stories. I think your energy is so full of what life is for various people that it seems like it can't stop like that.
No. We were talking before about being on fire,
mm-hmm.
and I am on fire, and I love that. I'm actually speaking to you from a spiritual community that I started here in Mexico called Namaste Lake Chapala.
Oh, wow.
And by the way, if you hear any bombs go off, I'm surprised that we haven't had any in the last 20 minutes or so that we've been talking, because I'm perfectly safe. No one has to worry about me. But that's the thing about living in Mexico. Whenever there's a celebration, they blow off these huge firecrackers that are enormous, and they sound like bombs.
Wow.
So if you hear that, don't worry. But yeah, I'm on fire with this, and I can't help myself. I just want to share it and just live it myself. And for me, traveling across the country penniless like this, this is going to be my way of radically living this message,
mm-hmm.
just as Francis did 800 years ago.
Wow. Well, it's very courageous, but I guess you've dropped inside and you're doing it as a vibrational being, right?
Well, I've done so many other things that people think are courageous, but they didn't feel that way to me. I've spent a lot of time going to war zones to share the peace concert. I remember the first time I was invited to Iraq by Saddam Hussein. That was the first time I was ever a little bit nervous, even though I'd already been to Bosnia and been shot at and things like that. When I went to Iraq, I wondered how I was going to be received. And yet what I have found there and everywhere else is people just like you and I, people who long for peace, people who want a peaceful life for their family. And I remember after I did this big concert in Baghdad, they had a big party for me, and all we did is sit around singing Simon and Garfunkel songs. So
isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, courage, I guess, but to me, this is just what I love to do.
And people are really responsive to you. It's a wonderful thing, you know.
Yeah.
I just feel like you're a reference for many people who want to purify and simplify and just love their life, you know.
I hope so. I mean, I that's not the reason I'm doing it. I'm doing it because it's just what I love and where I'm being guided. But we all hope that we can inspire people to do what they love and to follow their own guidance. And if that's happening, then yeah, that's great.
So talk about a little bit about, I want to go in many directions, but what about the spiritual community? Is it based on St. Francis?
Well, that's a good question. I've been a student of A Course in Miracles for over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really my spiritual foundation. And yet Francis also has always been there for me. So in a way, I've combined the two, and we call this a non-dual interfaith peace community, which means that we bring together non-dual traditions from many different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So A Course in Miracles is a main one because many people here are Course students, but not everyone. But we have a great love of St. Francis. When you come to our community, on the gate outside, you have a big painting of St. Francis. On the other side, you have a big painting of St. Clare, which, by the way, well, since I mentioned Clare, let me say something about her, because
sure,
she is so often forgotten or neglected in this conversation. And St. Clare is just as important to this story as Francis was. Clare was the first woman to be inspired by Francis and to leave everything and to come and follow his example. In fact, I mean, Francis, he was the son of a rich cloth merchant, but Clare's family was the closest thing to royalty that they had in Assisi. They were from an ancient Roman family, and when she snuck away from her house and cut her hair and became a sister, that was a very big deal. And she inspired thousands of women to do the same thing. And there are at least two different stories of how Clare herself saved Assisi from being destroyed by armies twice. And yet we don't hear much about her because she was a cloistered sister, meaning she never left her convent. And yet popes and princesses and kings, they would always come to her for her advice. And so that's why I say she's such an important part of this. She is the feminine counterpoint to Francis. And without Clare, Francis would not have had the same power and recognition that he did have because of this strong woman standing right next to him.
I love that story, especially the strong woman part. We need a few more of those heroines, don't we?
We do indeed.
So let me say this, my understanding, and I could be ignorant, although I was raised Catholic as well, but St. Francis had a radiance where he could calm animals and all that. I'm right about that, aren't I?
Well, yes, absolutely. That was definitely a part of his life. One never knows, of course, with a character like Francis, how much of what we're hearing is absolutely true or how much is
alleged,
somewhat fabricated. Let me give you one example.
But I just want to put one point in before you talk.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Is that, you know, way back, some of the TMers for 3 months did a meditation in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And during that period of time, there were many difficulties like alcoholism, robberies, thieveries, whatever, kind of calmed down. And when I
watched the Maharishi effect.
Yeah. And when I think of St. Francis, I think he had that, but I don't know that. But when you go traveling and you do this kind of work, or even in your community, you also have a really radiant impact on whoever's watching, do you not?
I hope so, but I think that what really causes that is that usually when I go on a journey into a situation like that, probably one of the most recent is when I did a concert on a hill looking into a Syrian village held by ISIS.
Okay.
I was there with rabbis and imams and ministers and priests, and yet there were millions of people around the world who were with us, praying at the same time, sending their energy and their light into that situation. So I think it's really about the collective radiance. And to go back to what you were saying about Francis, there's a great story that it doesn't really matter if this story is literally true or not. But the story is often called Francis and the Wolf of Gubbio.
Okay.
Basically, Gubbio is a town very near Assisi, and there was a wolf on the outskirts of Assisi that was killing livestock and maybe even terrorizing people. And they didn't know what to do, and they couldn't find it, they couldn't kill it. And Francis comes along one day, and they tell him about it, and Francis says, I'm going to go have a conversation with this wolf. And of course, everyone follows to see the saint get eaten by this wolf. And they all stay back when he comes near the wolf's lair. And Francis goes up to the wolf, and the wolf comes charging. But then when Francis just kneels down, the wolf stops, and everyone looks as they seem to be having a conversation. And Francis makes a deal with the wolf that if he stops terrorizing the people, they will promise to feed him and care for him. And an agreement, the wolf put out his paw, they shook, and everything was good. Now, that's a beautiful story, and it does illustrate what you said, that radiance that connects with nature.
Mm-hmm.
However, more than likely, what most people say today is the wolf was not an animal wolf. It was a bandit who lived on the outskirts of Gubbio, who they called the wolf because he wore a wolf medallion around his neck, and he would terrorize and rob and beat up people. And Francis went out and had a talk with this bandit. Now, does it really matter? Of course not.
No.
Because these stories, whether they're literal or you know, whatever, whether they're fabricated, they teach us something.
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe that there are many stories that are true that do speak to that radiance of Francis that did allow him to talk to the birds and to the animals. And that's why we see him so often in our gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was not just the animals. It was everyone. It was kings and popes and common people, poor people, rich people.
Mm-hmm.
He had that effect on everyone because, once again, he was on fire with love. And when you're on fire with that love, then all bets are off. You know, it's not going to be an ordinary day.
Mm. So you're in Mexico. I love that, actually. I'm thinking about it a lot as I change the subject a bit here, which you're in Mexico right now. Is the response to you the same in Mexico as it is in other places? Do you see, you know, culturally, do you see some places responding better than others?
Not really. You know, love is love, and people respond to it in every language. You know, I live here in Mexico. I don't even speak Spanish.
Mm. how big is your community? Is it hundreds or 20 or what?
Well, the people who live here, we have, we will soon have 40 houses.
Okay.
So 40 to 50 people live here, but many people from the community, mainly gringos, because this, where we live, is the biggest expat community for Americans and Canadians in the whole world.
Mm.
And so there are, you know, tens of, probably 10,000 Americans and Canadians live here. In this very small area. But we do have Mexicans who come, and people from all over the world come here to live and to visit, because once again, there is a fire here. There, and it's not me, it's each and every single one of us,
mm-hmm.
because we're, like Vladimir Lenin said, we are 100% committed to peace here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people are coming from all over the world, and we have to keep building more houses for them. So if anyone ever wants to get more information on what we're doing here, if you go to Namaste Lake Chapala, that's CHAPALA.com, you can get all the information you want right there.
Well, I really love that it exists. This is very exciting stuff. Also, I wanted to refer back, this might be old news, but you did a whole thing on horse whispering, which I thought tied into...
I did?
Well, on your website, I went into this whole horse whisperer thing. But
no. Not me.
Isn't that funny? So something strange here. But actually, what I was thinking is the way you are.
That sounds
are,
fun, though. I kind of wish I had. That would be great.
The way you are and the St. Francis journey, it sort of makes, like I thought, well, the horse whisperer must have been an accident. But it came in, and I thought, well, people can use vibrations to communicate with animals much more than we used to. There are classes, there are all kinds of things. And I thought that was somehow in sync with your, you're still writing music, aren't you, with your vibrational impact
every day, with music and chanting.
You see what I mean? I was just saying, oh, that's a wonderful link to vibration.
Yeah. You know, first of all, I have to check this out because you're the second one that's brought that up in an interview. And I don't know if there's another James Twyman out there doing horse whispering or whatever it is, but that does sound fun. But in terms of the vibration, it's all vibration. Every little bit of it is vibration. And we can choose to live in that vibration of love and peace, or we can choose to live in that vibration of conflict. And we have been called to be the example of those who choose that higher vibration. And the more of us who do that, the more that vibration increases and draws everyone else. One of St. Francis's most famous quotes is when he said, "Our only job is to preach the gospel wherever we go, and when necessary, to use words." Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, that's very good. Yeah, I like
that. So what he's saying is it's the vibration. It's not the words. We've all been around people who say all the right words, but the vibration doesn't align.
Right.
You feel that there's something off. And we've also been around people who don't have a need to always be talking about spiritual topics. But when you're with them, your heart's on fire. And that's what St. Francis was, and that's what we long to be. And if more and more of us can just commit to that, commit to just getting burned alive by the fire of love, wow. I mean, imagine how the world would just change on its own. So that's what we're doing here in Mexico, and hopefully everywhere else that we go on this tour.
And you know something, James, I heard the other day that it would take maximum 3% of our
population. Oh, yeah, maximum.
Maximum, yeah. And I thought I'd throw that in with your numbers here. I really love that. So it is a growing concern for many, many people. And I don't know if they're coming at a bigger, faster rate, but it seems the way I hear people talk, we're looking for this kind of thing.
Well, I think it's because of what we see happening. People are motivated right now. Because the choice is very real. The choice between love and fear is palpable. It's on the news every day. It's in almost every conversation.
It's pounding into us all the time, isn't it?
Every moment, practically. And the grace within that is now we realize we have a choice. So what are we going to choose? I can go to CNN if I want, and I can get depressed by what's going on, or I can use it as an opportunity to pray, and use it as an opportunity to lift the vibration, not lower it. And so I think everything that's happening today is part of this grand plan and desire and design that, even though it seems very dark right now, you know, one of the things we have to remember is that Francis himself lived at the very end of what we now call the Dark Ages. And yet, what we often don't realize is what came right after the Dark Ages was the Renaissance, a time of new and great light and creativity. And Francis was a major inspiration for that. He was a major inspiration for the great artists of that time, the great painters and sculptors and musicians. And so what I'm wondering, if we followed through on what Vladimir Lenin said about the Russian Revolution, and there were 10, 20, 30 of us committed fully like Francis was, would that be enough to issue a new renaissance, a new time of great light and creativity? I don't know, but that's what I'm putting my bet on. And that's the reason that we're doing this tour. That's the reason we're taking this to Broadway. That's the reason we're going to be inviting the homeless to be part of this thing that, you know, usually people like that, even if they had the money, wouldn't be allowed in. But this is who we're doing it for.
Well, here's something funny is that I do a lot of intuitive work and so on. And my guide said recently, remember that love is fierce. And I went, what on earth does that mean? And, you know, as you speak about it, I go, yeah, love is fierce, isn't it? We have to have we have to have that. It's the most important thing. You have to move it through, right?
Fierce love. It has to be fierce.
Isn't that
lukewarm,
something?
Lukewarm love doesn't get you anywhere.
No, because you say you're on fire. I really love that. That's just marvelous. So talk about your music. Have you been a musician for a long, long time? And are you inspired by, for example, you look at CNN and you hear something and then you do prayers. Is that kind of how you develop your songs?
Well, I've been a musician most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Since I was 12 and started playing guitar and singing, and I began writing music right away. And I guess what inspires me, like, I try to write a song every morning. We have our session and meditation every morning at 9:30. And I try and write a new song every morning to share there. Because I just need to stoke the fire of that inspiration. I started writing a song every day a few years ago when I put the entire workbook of A Course in Miracles to music.
Oh, wow.
That was in 2015.
Wow.
And then I did that for like 4 years in a row, every single day, putting out a song to, you know, thousands of people. And I just got used to writing a song every day. But it all started, well, 25 years ago, actually, this year, is when everything took a turn for me. A friend of mine gave me a sheet of paper that had the peace prayers from the 12 major religions of the world. And this was really also the first time when I decided that I want to be like St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was in 1986, Pope John Paul II called the leaders of all the religions of the world, the 12 major religions, to come together in Assisi, the home of St. Francis, not to talk or discuss, but to simply pray the peace prayer from their tradition. And a friend of mine named Louis Randa happened to be there and brought those prayers back to the U.S. and began distributing them. A few years later, someone gave me that sheet of paper. And as I began to read each one, beginning with the Hindu prayer and then the Buddhist prayer and the Muslim peace prayer, I heard music almost as if it was coming from the next room. And I picked up my guitar and just began to play along. And within 1 hour, I had put all 12 of those prayers to music.
Oh, wow.
And they were beautiful. They were the most beautiful songs I'd ever written. And so I knew this was a gift, and I knew it was one that was meant to be shared. So I decided from that moment on just to dedicate my life to sharing those prayers. And I wanted to be like a penniless troubadour, like Francis. And the first place I went as the peace troubadour was Bosnia and Croatia in 1995. And that's when I had this remarkable adventure that I wrote about in my first book, Emissary of Light, which became a bestseller and did very well. And suddenly I was no longer a penniless troubadour. but I always clung to those prayers and made it a primary part of who I am. So I kind of feel like now it's like I'm going back to that original inspiration, going back to that desire not to be famous, not to have more money. I've had a wonderful career, and I'm so grateful for it. But now I just want to live this. And for now, that means traveling across the U.S. without any money,
mm-hmm.
without any idea of how we're going to get all the way to New York, and to show that being a radical today is as important as it was 800 years ago in the time of St. Francis.
Oh, that's precious, actually. I love that a lot. So what you're saying is that when you are, for example, penniless, you will be for a while, it's really about stepping out of the identities that we create for ourselves according to our incomes and all of these
yeah.
social constructs. Even if you had money, you could still do it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You could still
sure.
do it in a way.
Well, speaking of identity, when we start this tour on January 4th in Portland, Oregon,
mm-hmm.
from the moment I start that presentation, I'm going to be stepping into the identity of Francis.
Great.
And from that moment on, for the next 2 months, I'm going to do my best to not leave that identity, much as a method actor
mm-hmm.
when they are in a movie. Let's say Daniel Day-Lewis, when he played Lincoln in Spielberg's film.
Mm-hmm.
For 9 months, he was Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Every night, his wife slept with Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
She didn't sleep with her husband. It was Lincoln.
Hmm.
And I even heard that when they finished shooting, it took him about 3 days to get his Irish accent back.
Wow.
That's
wow.
how deep he went.
That's
and
marvelous.
So I'm going to be doing that with Francis, thinking like Francis, acting from that place. And I'm going to be curious, as many other people are going to be curious, to see who's left.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I going to be at the end of this? And I don't know, and it doesn't matter, but I know that it's going to change me. Because when all it really means is I'm going to be, from that whole journey, being as focused as I can on living this, on thinking like this every moment. And if that doesn't change one, then I don't know what will. But I think it's going to.
Well, and what an impact you have on people who kind of travel with you, observers, you know, so on, having to reflect that part of themselves. I want to ask you one final thing before I have to end this, is what do you wear on your feet?
Good question. I'm going to be one of two things. I'm going to either be barefoot,
mm-hmm.
or I'm going to be wearing what are called barefoot sandals. Barefoot sandals are the closest thing to being barefoot you'll ever have,
mm-hmm.
because there's really nothing, but they just protect your feet from sharp rocks or glass and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, I'm going to be trying to live as close to as Francis would have lived as I can. And that's going to mean as much as possible, even in the winter, because this will be in the winter, to be barefoot. And when I need to, I'll have a pair of socks and a pair of sandals on. But other than that, I won't have anything on.
Oh, I'm so excited for you. Excited isn't the right word. Deeply touched. How about that? And very, very pleased that you're doing this for us all, really. And
yes.
How can people be in touch? How could people find out where you're going to be? What is the access to information?
They can go to Jimmy Twyman, JimmyTwyman. First thing I'd suggest, if you're not on my email list, go ahead and sign up for it there. That way, when I'm on the tour, I'll be sending out emails every day, sharing where we are, what's happening, little videos and pictures and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also link there to the page about the musical, where you can see the calendar and you can see if I'm going to be coming through your city.
Mm-hmm.
And also watch the first 20 minutes of the musical that we shot there in Assisi.
Great. I can hardly wait. I am so grateful to have had this time with you, and I know that my listeners are as well. Thank you so much, James Twyman. Peace Troubadour.
You're welcome.
St. Francis in disguise.
Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Oh, it was my delight. Thank you. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters. And boy, this is going to be a wonderful trip for Peace Troubadour, James Twyman, inside and out. Thank you again, James.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.